Previously on We Live Here.
We need to take a hard look at ourselves and see what we can do better.
And my main wish was is that they straighten the audience out in Maplewood, because that was really, it could be my daughter next. It could be her daughter, my granddaughter. And I wish this on no one ever.
Hey everyone, it's me, Camille.
And me, Tim. And we're starting today's show with introducing you to a new friend of ours.
His name is Alan Alexander. He lives in Portland. He writes plays and music, and it turns out he's been listening to this season of our podcast really closely.
Mm-hmm. And one day he just kind of emails us out of the blue and he wants to talk about the show. And we're like, sure, because Alan has a connection to St. Louis. He grew up here. First, he lived in the city proper.
Then, in 1965, along with a wave of other upwardly mobile black folks, Alan's family got a new house.
They all had started working for the post office, literally. My dad and both of his sisters and my mother, they all worked for the post office. And that was the income that made them middle class and made them able to break out of the inner city situation. So
Alan's mom and dad picked University City, or U City as people around here call it. It hugs the west side of the city of St. Louis.
And you may have stomped through U City with your Air Force Ones. You may have been through U City and thought to yourself, man, it's getting hot in her.
This is our cheesy way of saying that U City, for those of you who don't know or maybe aren't in St. Louis, yeah. is That's Nellie's hometown.
Yes, it is. And Alan's family.
We digress.
Alan's family, his home, or their family home, is a tidy little brick two-bed. And it has just this really cool gas lamp in the front of the yard. And his parents paid $13,000 for this home back in 1965.
They added this kitchen extension because the house usually originally ended right there. And put a patio back here and a deck, you know, so They added some square footage to the house.
So Alan's elderly mom is still here. She has some memory issues. So he comes back to visit. And when he let us know he was coming a little bit ago, we pounced on the chance to meet him face to face.
And so the whole neighborhood was, like I said before, Jewish or Irish, pretty much. So we were the first black family to move on this block. And, it changed very rapidly.
How fast did it change?
Within 6 months, I believe, you know, the neighborhood was predominantly black. In less than a year, certainly.
Alan was a preteen at this time, so he certainly noticed that his white neighbors were moving out and black people were moving in, but he had other things on his mind.
Well, school was rough. Middle school's rough anyway.
Right.
And middle school is like, that's hell on earth for a lot of kids, you know, no matter what. So if you're the only black kid in an all-white school and you're 12 or 13 years old, that's rough.
By the time he was in high school, Alan understood more about what was behind all those moving trucks showing up when his family moved into the neighborhood. People were talking about it on the news, about how real estate agents were scaring all the white folks.
And they were using a term that he hadn't heard before, blockbusting.
Well, they'd go down to one of the houses and say, well, you know, there's a colored family moved down the street from you. Now, we'll give you $13 for your house today, no telling what it'd be worth tomorrow. So if I was you, I'd sell right now. And then they'd find a black family and, you know, pitch the house to a black family at a higher rate. And then, you know, they go to the white families down the street and say, well, now there's two of them. If I was you, I'd get out right now.
Alan's U City neighborhood has remained almost entirely black. The house his parents bought is worth about $90,000 today.
But this experience of being a first shaped him profoundly. It's why he says he kind of became a loner, why he tries to reject tribal politics, and why he never thought he'd come back to St. Louis.
I'll say that when I left here in 73, I probably had no intention of really ever coming back. And I've lived, I haven't lived here since then. And up until a couple of years ago when I kind of became responsible for taking care of this trust, I had, you know, I might get here once every 2 or 3 years, you know, to see my mom. Now that I've been coming here a lot, I've been reminded of the culture of St. Louis and the things, some of the things that made me want to leave as a youngster. You know, the polarization, the racial polarization here, and I'll give you an example. I was actually having to do some. I was actually looking at having to do some chimney repairs on this piece of property. So I went online. I was in Portland planning the chimney repairs to happen when I was going to be here. So I went online in Portland. I looked at you know, chimney repair companies, chimney sweeps online. I found the one that was the highest rated one that seemed like it was the best. I can't remember the name of it, so don't ask me the name of it, but I did find one that was highly rated. So I was going to book them to take care of this problem. And then it said, you know, before you book an appointment, be sure to check our service area. And when I looked at the service area, I realized that they didn't service any place where black people live. And I didn't book them, of course, but it took me a while to see that. You know, it's like I was just doing my research and I'm going, oh, okay. That's St. Louis.
We've brought you a lot of stories this year that show just how this system of segregation works, how it's bigger than individuals, it's ingrained in policies and practices, and yes, sanctioned by the state.
But systems don't succeed without people. A lot of people, ordinary people, well-meaning people, not so well-meaning people, racist people, greedy people, pioneers, and unwilling participants.
But on today's show, we're zooming in on a particular group, the ones who still hold immense power, even today, in guiding where people choose to live and raise families.
Today's show is all about real estate agents and what happens when some try to make amends for their industry's past transgressions by focusing on a single neighborhood. From St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here, a show for people somewhere on the woke spectrum. In general, to make an amends, you need to acknowledge the past and learn from it, and view those past choices through a clear moral or ethical code.
Whatsoever ye would that men should do unto you, do ye also unto them. And you may know this as the golden rule of realtors, or of NAREB, the National Association of Real Estate Boards.
Y'all know this voice. It's Aaron Williams, friend of the show and frequent tour guide to people here wanting to learn more about the Ville neighborhood. A few months back, he was giving a tour to a few real estate agents prepping for a community service event in the neighborhood.
If you know a little bit about the history, you know that racial restrictive covenants were sort of like the stepchildren of the Association of Realtors Code of Ethics. It's basically an evolution of that code of ethics that led to racial restrictive covenants, which led to the formation of the Ville and the Greater Ville in the shape that you see it, which is a 1 square mile block and then a horseshoe around it, being called the Greater Ville, and eventually led to the monumental Shelley versus Kramer lawsuit and Supreme Court decision where racial restrictive covenants were completely deconstructed across the United States. So when you guys sign up to honor that, it was like, wow, like, this is perfect. Come back and sort of put a period on the end of that sentence to reconcile the issues that were caused by, you know, real estate practices in the United States over years.
As Aaron makes clear during the tour, these practices were anything but abstract, and they were especially explicit here in St. Louis.
Dear neighbor, Do you realize that at any time you are liable to suffer an irreparable loss due to the coming of Negroes into the block in which you live or in which you own property? The race question is one of vital interest to property owners. A color resident in your immediate neighborhood destroys the value of your property immeasurably. This is from a letter called Dear Neighbor by the United Welfare Association and the St. Louis Real Estate Exchange in 1915. So sort of at the beginnings of the Ville neighborhood. With that, we can go to our first spot, which will be the Annie Malone Children's Home. So we'll all hop in our cars and then I'll pick up on the conversation like it never ended once we get there. All right.
Now, we know you guys are very familiar with the Ville at this point, and if you aren't, scroll back in our feed to hear about this special neighborhood in St. Louis.
From language in pamphlets to legislation, at each stop on the tour, Aaron continues reading back to realtors pieces of historical texts. Here's what he read at Annie Malone's children's home.
Perhaps you do not think that your neighborhood will be invaded. Neither do you believe you're going to have a fire when you pay your fire insurance. While perhaps you have not yet been affected by this class of people coming into your neighborhood, you surely want protection against this growing danger, which is more menacing than fire or elements. At present, you have no remedy in that matter of this kind. This is also from Dear Neighbor, the same letter that I quoted to you guys when we were at the last stop. Our next stop will be the Tandy Community Center, which we don't have to get in our car, it's just right here. We'll just walk to the front of it.
At this point in the tour, our guides point out that efforts to separate white and black life didn't end at letters and real estate publications.
We stop at the Tandy Community Center.
The center is named after Captain Charlton Hunt Tandy, an African-American Civil War veteran, an Underground Railroad coordinator, politician, and an activist.
Here, Aaron reiterates that St. Louis pioneered the conversion of segregationist ideas into segregationist public policy.
Side note, it's like a rule of nature that whenever you are talking to somebody outside or whenever Tim and I are talking to somebody outside, somebody fires up a chainsaw.
That happened in this clip.
This is what you're going to hear.
But
fair warning.
Yeah.
We, the undersigned qualified electors of the city of St. Louis and state of Missouri, pursuant to Article 5 of the Charter of the City of St. Louis, now in force, hereby propose an ordinance of the city of St. Louis to prevent ill-feeling conflict and collisions between white and colored races in the city of St. Louis. That hereafter it shall be unlawful for any colored person to use as a residence or place of abode or to establish and maintain as a place of public assembly any house, building or structure or any part thereof in any block as same is hereinafter defined or which 75% or more of such houses, buildings or structures are occupied or used as residences, places of abode, or public assembly by white people. This initiative was passed with a two-thirds majority vote in the city of St. Louis and became the first referendum in the nation to impose racial segregation on housing.
After the rec center is Sumner High School, the alma mater for many famous black St. Louisans, and another history lesson.
The housing segregation ordinance that I quoted to you would eventually be shot down by the Supreme Court, and the city would then turn to a more private means of segregation that we all know of with restrictive covenants. Those started to sort of take off in the early 1920s. All the while, you had this happening in the Ville. You had Sumner High School bringing in loads of African Americans and really creating a self-sustained, thriving neighborhood. So you got this juxtaposition of like a really great story as a result of a really bad story, but they're happening at the same time. And it kind of leaves you wondering like, you know, what should I celebrate? Should I celebrate the segregation that's causing this thriving community? Or, you know, should I go out and march on these streets and try to put an end to these racial restrictive covenants? So at this point, I always like to ask people if they're kind of getting the idea of what type of neighborhood this was. It was a neighborhood where you can literally be born, go to elementary school, go to middle school, and then turn around and go to high school, graduate, and go to college without ever leaving the neighborhood. And then this street that we're standing on, Billups, was actually lined with businesses, like neighborhood retail, in addition to Easton Avenue. So the dollar turned over 9-10 times. You literally never had to leave. Like Julia said, your teacher lived down the street from you, your doctor lived around the corner from you, your lawyer was a couple blocks away. I mean, it was what we're trying to rebuild now with real estate, right? We're trying to build walkable, self-sustained communities, and this was that model community.
I've never had a tour quite like this before. This was unique, and I'll be thinking about it for a long time myself.
Mark Levinson is the head of the St. Louis Realtors, and at the end of the tour, he makes this commitment.
We promise to treat your neighborhood with respect.
A few months after that tour and history lessons, a few hundred real estate agents descended on a block of homes just up the street from the original Shelley House.
The goal? Helping homeowners get caught up on deferred maintenance or other home projects. You can kind of think of this as a home improvement block party.
We've gotten support from the electricians and the plumbers unions, and also we're putting roofs on homes, we're redoing kitchens, we're redoing flooring, we're painting. We're doing a lot of landscaping. We're building ramps for disabled people so they can actually get in their homes.
Okay, now you got to introduce yourself.
Okay, I'm Barry Upchurch. And I'm the immediate past president of St. Louis Realtors, and I'm the incoming president of Rebuilding Together St. Louis. Barry Upchurch, it's B-A-R-R-Y.
He also went on the neighborhood tour months earlier.
You know, for a layman, I kind of think of the Ville as like the Harlem of the Midwest. It's got so much rich history to it, and we really would like to make sure that we retain a lot of that and bring the Ville back to its glory, that what it was in the day.
And Mark Levinson, head of the St. Louis Realtors, a local association for the real estate industry, says folks in his business, they got to do a lot better job trying to correct the past.
We understand that there's still inequality in our neighborhoods, but we feel we have an obligation to make sure, as I said, that everyone is treated equally. And we have our advocacy group works with both the city government and the county government to advocate for fair housing and to make sure that everyone's voice is heard. You know, we make our living on people buying homes in neighborhoods. All over, in North City, North County, West County, in the Central West End. So diversity is key. And St. Louis really needs to work harder to make sure that we do a better job of blending our neighborhoods.
Later this fall, Mark says, the group plans to return and make repairs to the original Shelley home and put a park next to it. He says more and more local real estate agents are aware of their industry's role in the city's segregated past and present.
As a realtor, every 2 years we're required to take 12 hours of continuing education to make sure that we are serving the public to the best of our ability. Three of those hours has to be related to things like fair housing. And we want to make sure that all of our realtors, regardless of the areas that they work, whether it's North St. Louis or West St. Louis County, know the history of the trials and tribulations that residents of our greater metropolitan area have gone through over the years. It's all part of our code of ethics. The National Association of Realtors adheres to one of the most strict codes of ethics of any organization in the country, and that's a big part of it. The credo, the very beginning of our code of ethics, is based on the golden rule: treat others as you wish to be treated. And we want to make sure that all realtors adhere to that, and that's part of the reason why we're here today.
Broker Gail Brown sometimes teaches those classes Mark was talking about. In fact, earlier this spring, she led a series of sessions on housing discrimination for real estate professionals during a regional conference celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Fair Housing Act. And she knows real estate inside and out.
Well, you know, I've been in the industry all my life. I would say actually about 30 years. I'm a second generation. My father started the company, and so I've always been involved in real estate. In our office, we actually started not too far from here in the Fairgrounds neighborhood.
This year, Gail helped restart a chapter of an African American real estate association. She says it's sorely needed, but she also doesn't dismiss the efforts she saw at the Home Repair Blitz. In fact, she was there.
For the realtor community, we started looking at efforts like this after the Ferguson event and thinking that we were out of touch with the community. And so as a result, a couple years ago, the St. Louis Realtors started a committee called the Community Engagement. And, you know, we were in Old North last year. And, you know, now we're, you know, in the Greater Veal neighborhood. Yes, you know, when you see people out here, it is genuine. You know, I think it is genuine.
Do you find yourself having to educate a lot, or are you finding that people come to it with some knowledge?
No, I feel that we have to educate a lot. When, you know, you start talking about redlining and how, you know, you couldn't get loans in certain areas. When you talk about, you know, how people, you know, wouldn't allow you to buy properties, you couldn't buy properties due to our restrictive covenants, you couldn't sell properties to African Americans. And then you talk about as well zoning. You know, as realtors, you know, this is our profession, this is our careers, and so this is how we make a living, and it's very easy to do what is the most economically feasible thing to do, because we have to put food on the table, we have to, you know, provide, you know, a living. And so you could see how sometimes we could be perhaps oblivious to what is really needed in our community. So that's why I think that this community engagement effort by the St. Louis Realtors is so important, because it actually, as you see, it engages the realtors in the community, and we can give back. And I think the more that we, you know, get out into different areas and get to know different people, I think that then you'll start to see the difference.
Kelly Tyler is one of the residents whose home was part of the housing repair blitz. And Kelly says she could care less about the motives behind the real estate agents who did the work. But it did help her family.
They're making my house wheelchair accessible for my husband, my bathrooms, my front porch. They're also giving us a ramp and a lift so he can get in the house and be safe. They're redoing my kitchen, which was a surprise because I didn't know about that one, and redoing some floors and doors, just really making it accessible for me to bring my husband home more often out of the nursing home to encourage him to, you know, to work harder to get better.
Her parents, who live next door, also got work done to both the inside and outside of their home.
They see the need and the desire, and, you know, our area is going to continue to thrive and flourish, and we want to build up the city and make it vibrant again. And I'm glad they're here to see that, and that they're not, you know, just focusing on people further outside of the city. And the city is, you can see the revitalization that's happening. And so it's good to see that they're here and they want to help and help. You know, this is also a Christian thing. You know, this is people loving people. It doesn't matter. You know, so I love it. I think it's awesome.
So, this was a feel-good story, right?
Kind of, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And for the residents of the 5 homes that got repairs, there is no doubt that it made a difference. It showed a lot of people what can happen when you flood resources into someplace intentionally.
But let's be real. We know, and you all know, there is still a lot to be done in order to counter decades of deliberate actions aimed at excluding Black people and people of color from certain communities.
And in a region where life expectancies can be dramatically affected by your zip code and the color of your skin, this has real consequences.
Everybody that lives north of Del Mar doesn't always get the help that they deserve or need.
Lisa Mandel is an independent real estate broker who helped fix up some of the homes in the neighborhood. As carpenters work in the background, she says it'll take a lot more than a few days of work to repair the past.
So we're trying to make that right, I guess, just today. It's a small step in all the work that has to be done, but it's a step.
Next time when we live here.
They should stop blaming us tenants down here. My apartment real clean. Because they even social media was downgrading us. They live in filth. We all don't live in filth.
We Live Here is produced by me, Camille Stanley.
And me, Tim Lloyd. Alana Sistrunk is our associate producer.
And Robert Peterson is our boss. He is the head of radio programming here at St. Louis Public Radio.
And from St. Louis Public Radio and PRX, this is We Live Here.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
From PRX.